जाए बारमा तुम जा बिहार गोपी चंद वाला पा की रहे जय गोपी चंद वाला पा की रहे यशोद नंदन गज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन गज जन रंजन चमन चीरा बन छाई जमीन चीरा बन छाई हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivartakacharya Astacharya Satishri Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivartakacharya Astacharya Satishri Shri Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Ki. Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki. Prem Gaho Shri Krishna Titani Prabhupada Chinanda Shri Dvaita Garadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Shambhakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Verse 26. So we'll go through that first. Tato Nanda Vrajamita. Vitakam sadribhyayata Ekarasya samastatra Gurarchi sabalovasat Tito nanda vajamita Pitrakam sadribhyayata Ekadasha samastatra Gurarchi sabalovasat Tata Thereafter Nandarajam cow pastures of Nanda Maharaj. Bita, being brought up. Pitra, by his father. Kamsat, from Kamsa. Vibhibhyata, being afraid of. Ekadasha, 11. Sama, years. Chatra, therein. Guda Archi, covered fire. Sabala, with Baladev. Avasat, recited. So, I'd like to chant the verse. Oh, it's not up. It's not up there. It's not up there? Okay, so we'll just go ahead then. So the translation thereafter, his father, being afraid of Kamsa, brought him to the cow pastures of Maharaj Nanda, and there he lived for 11 years like a covered flame with his elder brother Balaram. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Amanganata Mirandasya Ganagana Salakaya Chakshiran Maritam Yena Asmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, there was no necessity of the Lord's being dispatched to the house of Nanda Maharaj out of fear of Kamsa's determination to kill him as soon as he appeared. It is the business of the Asuras to try to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or to prove by all means that there is no God, or that Krishna is an ordinary human being and not God. Lord Krishna is not affected by such determination of men of Kamsa's class, but in order to play the role of a child, he agreed to be carried by his father to the cow pastures of Nanda Maharaj, because Vasudev was afraid of Kamsa. Nanda Maharaj was due to receive him as his child, and Yashoda Mayi was also able to enjoy the childhood pastimes of the Lord, and therefore to fulfill everyone's desire. He was carried from Mathura to Vrindavan just after his appearance in the prison house of Kamsa. He lived there for 11 years and completed all his fascinating pastimes of childhood, boyhood, and adolescence with his elder brother, Lord Baladev, his first expansion. Vasudev's thought of protecting Krishna from the wrath of Kamsa is part of a transcendental relationship. The Lord enjoys more when someone takes him as his subordinate son who needs protection of a father than he does when someone accepts him as the Supreme Lord. He is the father of everyone and he protects everyone. But when his devotee takes it for granted that the Lord is to be protected by the devotee's care, it is a transcendental joy for the Lord. Thus, when Vasudev, out of fear of Kamsa, carried him to Vrindavan, the Lord enjoyed it. Otherwise, he had no fear from Kamsa or anyone else. So the first question I had was, why is it that the Asuras, why do they want to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Anybody want to say yeah? Okay, he's afraid that he might kill them. Okay, what else? Okay, they were hired by Kamsa, okay. But in general, even like, let's say, in our day and age, we're not with Kamsa, but why do people, they want to say, well, Krishna's not God, or they want to say that he's not so powerful. Why do you think? Why do you think they don't want it? That's good, but why do you think they don't want it to be real? Anybody want to answer that question? Why do you think they don't want there to be a God? They don't want it to be real. Yes. Well, that, and also, anybody else want to answer that question? Yes.
Because they think they're God.
Well, that's good, yeah. Because they think they're God, and they don't really want to listen to anybody, right? They don't want to listen to, they don't want to follow a bunch of rules. They think they're God, and they're here in the material world, and many of us come to this world thinking that we're God, or we're just as good as God, and so, that was a good answer. And the other point that I wanted to focus on today was this idea of Vasudev having this transcendental relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada talks in the Nectar Devotion, he talks about a lot about relationships. There's so much information about that. And he says that basically in this world, we're all servants, right? We all serve. Do you serve your teachers? Kind of, yeah. They ask you to do something, write something, you do it. Do you serve your parents? Yeah, yeah. And parents serve their children, and they, you know, the husband serves the wife serves the husband. And everyone's basically a servant. Some people go beyond the family, serving in the family or the society, and they're philanthropists. They want to, like, serve the, you know, serve the greater society. And then there's nationalists who want to serve the nation. And beyond that, you know, people who care about the universe. But it also says that unless, you know, this loving spark that we have, this love that we have in our heart, that it expands just like a vibration of light or a sound vibration. But where does it end, you know? Like when a child is born, what's usually the first relationship that the child has when he's born? Yes?
His mom.
His mom, that's right. You know, the little baby, the mother nurses the baby, and the child is so in love with the baby. And then who else was the child love as he grows up? The dad, yeah, yeah. And he gets a little older, and then what?
Grandparents.
Grandparents, okay, good.
Brothers and sisters.
Yeah, and then he gets a little older, and he has?
Friends.
Yes, friends, yeah. So basically, yes?
Siblings.
Siblings, that's right. Brothers and sisters, yes.
Then as he grows up, he gets a girlfriend or a boyfriend.
That's right. And he gets older, then, you know, the love expands. But the point that they make in the Nectar of Devotion is that you can only get so much satisfaction from these material relationships. And unless our love grows to include Krishna, then we never feel completely satisfied. We'll always feel like something's a little bit missing. And when people in their lives think there's something missing, you know, say they get married, but they're like, something's missing, a lot of times, that's right, but a lot of times, you know, they get divorced because they'll find somebody else, or, you know, this happens. But without Krishna being there, no matter who you're with, it's going to be a little bit lacking. It's not going to be so satisfying. So Prabhupada makes the point that by this process of bhakti that we have, that our love can grow and grow, but not only for Krishna. When we love Krishna, we love everybody, just like if you want to water a tree, do you take your watering can and water all the leaves?
No.
No. You water the root. Or if we're hungry, we don't take, you know, our prasadam and put it on our head or mess it up in our hands or put it on our, you know, we put it in our
mouth
and it goes down to our stomach and that feeds the whole body. So the point that Prabhupada makes in Nectar of Devotion is that if we practice this process of bhakti, it's called deathless amrita, deathless nectar, because it goes on forever and ever and ever. Everybody has the propensity to love. Everybody has that propensity to love. Even, I was going to tell you some stories. I think you'll like these stories. Even animals. This is a story about Spotty and Brownie. And they were good friends. They were both little dogs, and they lived next door to each other, and they would visit all the time. But one day, Brownie disappeared, and they couldn't find him anywhere. But they didn't worry about it too much, because he'd been missing before, so they thought, oh, he'll come back. But then the next day he didn't come back, or the next day, and even a week went by, and still Brownie didn't come back. So they were concerned, but Spotty was especially concerned, and Spotty came to Brownie's master's house, and he started barking and barking and barking, and they were like, go away, you know, go away, Spotty. So he wouldn't stop, you know, finally they went outside, and he'd start walking, and he'd turn around and look and see if they were following him, and they went, you know, down a path and under a fence, and finally he brought him to where Brownie was. Brownie was in the woods, but he had his foot was in a trap. And so that was amazing enough that Spotty took that time and energy and love that he had for his friend to go and find him. But also they found that all these scraps from every meal that Spotty had eaten through the week, he had brought some of it to his friend and put it right there. So sometimes people think that dogs don't have souls, or they're not very important, but Prabhupada makes the point that, yeah, that animals, they do have souls, and they also have that propensity to love. There was another story about at a circus. So how many people have been to a circus before? Okay, so not so many, but some of you. So in the circus, usually they have a big round circle where a lot of things are going on, and then there's stands, you know, like football stands, where people are sitting watching what's going on. So there was this big elephant, and he was performing tricks, and everybody's watching, but the mother was also watching. Her little girl ran down and went into the circle with the elephant, and everybody was like, oh, what's going to happen? And the mother ran down there frantically, but you know what happened? The elephant took the little girl in his trunk, and he picked her up, and he brought her right over to the mother. So he was very intelligent, and he was also very kind. So there's a book I have, it's called Random Acts of Kindness by Animals, and there's so many stories of different animals and their compassion. There's one, did you have a question, honey? Oh, that's so nice. Actually, I have another story of a monkey. This story happened in Delhi in India. And there was a mother. She was walking down next to a river, on the shore of a river. And she kind of slipped. And her baby, she had a little baby. The baby rolled down into the river. And it was flowing quite quickly. And she didn't know how to swim. So you can imagine she was totally crying and freaking out. And there was a group of monkeys watching the whole thing, but one of the monkeys immediately jumped into the river, grabbed the baby, brought it up to the mother, and placed it at her feet. So there's so many stories like that. Let's see. Do you like these stories? Okay, let me tell another one. I know some of you have to leave. Okay, this is an amazing story about, this is an apartment building, and we're on the third floor, which is like 36 feet up. And there's a man and his wife who live in the apartment, and their little girl. So the man went into the kitchen to get something. When he came out, he noticed his little girl, 3-year-old girl, that she was missing. And he also saw that the window was open. So he went to the window, and he looked out the window, and there was his little 3-year-old girl, and she was crawling on the ledge. And, you know, you can imagine how he wanted to scream, but he didn't because he didn't want to startle the girl. But also they had an Alsatian dog, and that dog also was on the ledge. And he was kind of whining, like, he was scared too. But he was going, following the little girl. The man called his wife, and she came and watched by the window. He went downstairs with some of the neighbors, and they got a big, you know, piece of material that if she would fall, they would catch her. But what happened is the dog caught the little baby by the diaper, and just little by little, because you couldn't turn around, he backed up until it got close enough where the mother could grab the baby. So happy ending due to that. They were actually thinking of getting rid of the dog because they thought maybe it was too big of a dog to have around the little girl, but No, they kept it. Yes.
Orcas?
Okay. Okay, I wish we had a mic. He could have told the story. Why don't you come up here? Can you save the mic real quick? Don't be afraid. I didn't get a detail either.
The orca gave the stingray to the man.
And why did he do that? Okay. All right, thank you. All right, and this is an interesting story too. This man, he had a poodle, you know, a little dog, and he was taking it for a walk, and then there was a huge snowstorm, and somewhere or other, the poodle and the man were separated. And so the man looked everywhere, but he could not find the poodle. He finally went home feeling very brokenhearted. You can imagine how you'd feel if, you know, your dog, you couldn't find your dog. So he's at his home, and in the middle of the night, there is a knock at the door. And he opens the door, and it's a taxi cab driver, and he says, "Is this your poodle?" He's like, "Yes, yes, that's my poodle. Oh my gosh, little poo-poo poodle. You know, I'm so glad you're home." He goes, "Well, where was he?" He said, "Well, he was driving in the snowstorm. He was driving his taxi cab. And what happened was a German shepherd jumped in front of the cab and wouldn't let him go. And so the taxi cab driver, he had a business to do, right? So he honked his horn. The German shepherd wouldn't budge. He tried to, like, scare him, you know, bully him by, you know, moving the car closer. But the German shepherd wouldn't budge. So finally he got out of the car to, you know, probably try to chase the German shepherd away. But again, the German shepherd's like, "Oh, oh, oh." You know, he brought him over to the side. And what happened is that when there was a snowplow, and the snowplow, as it was clearing the street, it pushed the poodle up into a snowbank, and he wasn't able to move. So the taxi cab driver got the poodle, he saw found his identification, and he brought him home. So there's so many stories like that of animals, what to speak of the love and devotion that Krishna has for us, or the love and devotion that devotees have, that they're able to help so many people. Now we take a look at our own Srila Prabhupada and everything that Srila Prabhupada, all the austerities that he performed. You know, all those austerities he performed were really done just to help us, you know, come closer to Krishna. He was willing to go through all that. Even though when he got to America, he felt like, "Why did you bring me here?" He goes, because he had known that someone had come before him. And he had told people, "Okay, you can't do this, no drugs, you know, no drugs or alcohol, no sex outside of marriage, no gambling, no meat, fish, or eggs." And he wasn't successful at all. And Prabhupada said, "When I tell people the principles, they're just going to tell me, please go home. They're not going to want to hear from me." But what did Prabhupada do instead of just telling people what the principles were? What was Prabhupada's transcendental strategy? Yes.
He was
giving
them prasadam, or taking them to the temple.
Yeah, you said something important right in the beginning. The prasadam, right? Prasadam was such a secret weapon that Prabhupada was able to use to purify people, and you know, such wonderful food that they had never had before. Once when I was in Hawaii, actually when I was in Miami, and Prabhupada came to visit Miami, he was talking about prasadam. And he said that all of you have come to me because of prasadam. He said, even you, Abhiram, and Abhiram was a temple president. So one of the devotees raised their hand and they said, "Prabhupada, is it true that if you take prasadam, you're guaranteed to be a human in your next life?" Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's true." So all the devotees started going, "Haribo, yay!" You can imagine, they were so happy about that. But when it quieted down, then Prabhupada said, "There are some species of monkeys that are considered human." So, you know, prasadam is a great strategy. And also, Prabhupada made it so fun. What else did he do besides prasadam, you know, to attract people to Krishna consciousness? What else did he do? Anybody say? Something that you all love to do, that you do pretty much every day. He did kirtan, right? Prabhupada went out to a park, and went to Tompkins Square Park. He sat down in the park. He had his kartals, and he just started to sing And people came around. They were attracted by, well, what's he doing? Why is he doing this? And at that time, too, people had a lot of questions about life. You know, what is life for? You know, what's my purpose in life? And because they had those kind of questions, Prabhupada also says that, and Krishna says, that when someone wants to know the answers to questions in life, that Krishna will, he sends a guru. So at that time, so many of the young people, hippies, they weren't satisfied with mundane, normal life. They wanted to know, well, why am I here? What happens when I die? Where am I going? And because they had those kind of desires, Krishna sent that guru. So we're so fortunate to have that and still have so many devotee gurus who are willing to help us, you know, make that journey back home, back to Godhead. I was going to tell a couple of stories also about devotees. There's a story about Krishna, and he's in a battle. He'd been battling with Jarasandha. He had so far 17 battles with Jarasandha. He was very envious of Krishna. And the 18th one, he didn't give up. He was sure he was going to win this battle. But what happened is Krishna decided to just up and leave. He decided to go. Him and Balaam decided to go. Does anybody know why he decided to go? Okay. Well, he decided to... Go ahead.
They were bored.
That could be. That could have been part of it, for sure. After 17 times, why wait around? But another of his purposes was that he wanted to see Rukmini. He had another purpose. Because while this was all going on, Rukmini, her marriage was being arranged to Shishupal. And originally, her parents had planned on having him marry Krishna because she had heard about Krishna. She'd heard about all the opulence, that he was the most intelligent and he was the wealthiest and he was the most beautiful and he was the strongest and he was also the most renounced. And she heard descriptions of his beauty, and she could only think of Krishna. But her brother decided that, Rukmi, he decided that, no, she should marry Shishupal. And she didn't want to marry him. When she heard it, she was so upset, but she was also very intelligent. When she heard that this arrangement had been made, she thought, well, there's no time for me just to sit and mope and cry about this. I'm going to do something, you know? You think that's a good idea? Think that's a good idea? Instead of like standing around crying about something, you think, well, what can I do about this problem? So what she decided to do is write a letter. She wrote a letter to Krishna saying, Krishna, I've always wanted to marry you. You're the one for me, you know, because of all your good qualities. And I want you to know that I also have very good behavior, and I've always meditated on you and always thought of you. And you're the one I want. You're the only one for me. So in the meantime, she wrote this letter and she gave it to a messenger to bring to Krishna, because the next day she's supposed to be married to Shishupal. And she doesn't want that at all. So in the meantime, Krishna and Balaram, they fled the battlefield. And what's amazing about this is that, you know, generally if somebody leaves the battle, what's one of the names they may give him? Right. It might call him a coward, you know, because look at you, you're running away. Krishna didn't care about that. He cared more about his loving relationship he had with his devotee. So the first thing they did was they climbed a mountain, really, really tall mountain. They climbed up there, him and, because they were a little tired, they were going to rest up there. But Jarasandha, he followed them. And he thought, he couldn't find them, so he thought, for sure they're up in the mountain. So what he did is he got some oil and he put it around the hill, near the top of the hill, and he lit it on fire. And he thought, okay, this is it. They're finished. You know, I got them. They're gonna burn to death. What did Krishna and Balaram do? Does anybody know? Yeah. Do you know how high the hill was? It was 88 miles high. And they just jumped down. You can imagine what a thrilling jump that must have been for them. When Jarasandha thought that he had finally got rid of him, but no, you know. So Krishna he went to Dwarka, and he was in time to receive the Brahmana, and he received the Brahmana with all the politeness, you know, and all the proper manners that you would receive the Brahmana. He was a good example of how you receive someone. He gave him some prasadam, bathed his feet, he gave him a place to rest, and then the Brahmana gave him the letter, and he read it, and Krishna was, you know, tell Rukmini for sure that I'll be there. She doesn't have to worry. She wants to marry me, and I also wanted to marry her. So off they go. And when Balaram hears that Krishna is going to Vidarbha to, you know, marry Rukmini, he thinks, well, I better go too, because there might not be enough protection. You know, so he goes there. They go there. And in the meantime, Rukmini, she just went in to see the goddess Durga and to get blessings. And of course, you know, she's just praying that Krishna will come. Although right before she came, she did get the message that Krishna was coming. So when she comes out of the temple, she's looking at all the princes, and all of a sudden, she sees him. She never met him before, but she knew from the description what he looked like. And she was just experiencing ecstatic symptoms. She's so happy to see him. And at that moment, Krishna took her hand, put her on the chariot, and off they went. So, you know, Rukmini was so beautiful that it described that the princess, they were falling off of their chariots. You know, they were all thinking, oh, she's the perfect girl for me. But, and just like falling over, they were just so enamored, so much in love. But some of them went after Krishna, and they tried to stop the chariot, and they tried to, Shishupal especially, were trying to shoot arrows, and Krishna each time he would, you know, down his arrows and down his weapons. So the point here is that all the trouble and all the love that Krishna had for his devotee, that he would spend all that time and you know, to rescue Rukmini. And Krishna does that for his devotees. You know, even we can feel that ourselves sometimes. We may be in a difficult situation. You know, a Brahmana always tries to be peaceful no matter what situation they're in. And that's hard sometimes if things are going wrong. You know, sometimes you want to get mad at somebody. You want to yell, you want to scream. But, you know, kind of Rukmini showed, and so many, you know, Prabhupada showed, that the best way to solve a problem is to really get in touch with Krishna, get in touch with Paramatma, you know, get in touch with Lord in the heart. There was another beautiful story about, this is from Chaitanya Leela, and this is about Gopinath Patanayaka. His father was Bhavananda Roy, and he had four brothers. They said in a previous life, they were the Pandavas, but in this life, you know, it's the Bhavananda Roy family. So Gopinath Patanayaka, he was a tax collector. So he'd go around collecting taxes from all the constituents, and he would bring the money to the king. But when it came time to collect the taxes, he was about 200,000 kahanas short. He didn't have enough. So what did that mean? What did that mean? He didn't have the right. He collected it. Yes. You have your hand up in the back there? What did it mean he didn't have the money? He spent it. He spent it on something else. So he was pretty much in big trouble. And some of the devotees, you know, they had some pretty severe punishments at that time. One of the punishments was to be thrown onto a chungo. You're kind of impaled, like thrown to a sharp object, and you just like thrown onto it, and you just die like that. So they were afraid that was going to happen to Gopinath Patanayaka, so they went to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, I mean, he should repay the money. So Gopinath Patanayaka, he was willing to do that. He had some beautiful horses, and he had some other belongings, possessions. So he brought them. And the prince, the son of the king, he saw the horses, but he didn't really like Gopinath Patanayaka for some reason. You know, envy has no cause. So he offered, maybe let's say the horse was worth, you know, $300,000, and he'd offered $30,000. Gopinath was like, what? That's ridiculous. He said, my horses are worth so much more than that. And he said, at least my horses aren't always looking at the sky. Because the prince had this little idiosyncrasy where he'd always keep his neck up. He'd often put his neck up and be looking at the sky. So basically, Gopinath Patanayaka, he offended, you know, the prince. The prince was really mad then, so that was it. You know, he was going to go on the Changas. The devotees again went to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, this is what's going to happen. Lord Chaitanya said, just pray to Lord Jagannath. You know, put your desires at the feet of Lord Jagannath. And they did that. And what finally happened is one of the ministers heard about it. He went to the king. And the king actually liked Gopinath Patanayaka. So he said, he immediately just stopped the whole thing. And not only did he stop it, but he gave Gopinath Patanayaka a promotion and he doubled his salary. So that's how much Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, loves his devotees. You know, he's really, he'll do anything for them. So there's, you know, so many stories, the story about the forest fire. In Vrindavan, when the cowherd boys and the cows, you know, they're in the forest, and the cows are always looking for better grass, right? They're always looking to find longer, greener, you know, tastier grass. So they kept on going farther and farther off, and then there was a big fire that started. So I guess maybe it's time to stop soon. All right, so anyway, there's so many examples of Krishna, you know, saving his devotees. I guess we'll take any kind of questions, additions, corrections, anyone would like to offer at this time. Anybody want to say something?
What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not really like him as a sannyasi.
It's true. In fact, I think he even said he was going to leave if they kept on bothering him. But at the same time, he did take care of it because he did love the he loved that devotee family. And families, you know, they try to take care of each other. And the thing is, Prabhupada says in a lecture that I heard, you know, we all love our family. You know, we love our mothers and our fathers and our sisters and our brothers. And he said, but, you know, our families are going to end. It has an ending point. Where he said, when we belong to Krishna's family, there's no end. So Prabhupada said, so why are you rotting here? Why are you rotting here? Begin to become part of Krishna's family. You know, just make the effort. You know, nihabhikrama nashasti pratyavayana vidyate svapamapasti dharmasya mahato chaite bhavat, that even a little advancement on this path can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So whatever we do for Krishna, that's in our eternal bank account. Krishna appreciates that so much. We may think it's not very important, you know, that we pick some flowers and, you know, and offer it, or that we cook an offering. We may think that, well, we're not needed, but just like Vasudev in this Vatsalya Ras, because there's five rasas that we can have with the Lord, and the Vatsalya Ras is that rasa of parental affection. So we can begin to develop these kind of relationships. Like Santa Ras is a ras that's, it's very neutral. Like you might be Krishna's flute or the cow or the grass, you know, there's awe and reverence, but there's not so much affection. And then Sakyaras or Dasyaras, service is included. And each ras, as it continues, it contains everything from the previous relationship, but adds something else. So the Dasyaras, that includes serving. So, you know, so many devotees were are famous for their service. Hanuman is a good example. He was such a great servant of Lord Ram. And then after that, there's Sakyaras, and Sakyaras is becoming friends with Krishna, and there's some love involved here. You know, the love is growing. And so he was friends. Krishna was friends with Arjuna and Bhima, so many people, and also, you know, the cowherd boys. And then Madhurya Ras, which is the highest Ras, which includes all the other feelings, but there's more of an intimate relationship with the gopis and with the queens of Dwarka. So being part of Krishna's family is such an incredible opportunity that we have. And we're already part of it. We're already part of it. We're already serving. You know, we don't have to worry so much about what rasa we're in. We're just trying to give the love, share the love. So, that's, yes.
If there's time.
Yes, there's time, I think.
I feel moved by how you shared the story of Shishupal and Rukmini and Krishna coming to rescue her. Something was moving for me in my heart. I'm trying to understand it.
And yeah.
I think about how I'm just thinking Rukmi, Shishupal, they're not seeing who Krishna is, so he's coming to save them. Also, he's coming to save Rukmini, but he's coming to save all the princes from their lusty desire that will keep them ensnared in the material world.
It's true.
And I was just, I think, moved by that. And even they're so angry that they're shooting arrows at Krishna, who's coming to really save them from themselves.
That's right. Like that. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and also what happened is Rukmi, you know, he was the one that tried to set up the marriage with Rukmini, with Shishupal, you know, and it's her brother. You know, Rukmini's brother, so Krishna's about to kill him, but Rukmini, she's like, no, please don't kill him, you know. He's my brother, and he may be ignorant, and he, you know, he thought he was doing the best thing for me, so please don't kill him. So I think what he does, he just, you know, maybe cuts off his beard or cuts off his hair. It's kind of like, you know, humiliating, but he didn't kill him, you know. So Krishna, when Krishna does one action, it helps in so many different ways. And these Krishna book stories, like Prabhupada would read Krishna book all the time, you know, because he said he didn't really write it. It was dictated to him. So, and there's a phenomena about Krishna book that when you read it once and you read it the next time, and there's so much more. It's like a living scripture, you know, that it, like you said, you kind of felt moved by the story. It kind of speaks to you. So that's really special. And it's really special that we have all these books. Like, I remember being in Vrindavan, 1976, and I'd get up early. That was BC, before children. I got up, you know, very early and chanted all my rounds, and I could see where Prabhupada's room was. He was up, and he was already, this is probably like 1:30 in the morning, he was already translating the books, you know, and he did that. I mean, he'd go to bed like at 10, and rest and get up at 1:30 and translate the book. So that was, you know, such a big part of his mission, because the books live on, you know. And of course, not just the books, there's all the videos and there's all the conversations, you know. There's more, you know, sometimes they'll measure history by the kind of sources, you know, primary sources, secondary sources. So I do believe that this is the first time in history that there's so many primary sources, that no matter how people try to criticize the Krishna consciousness movement, there's so much first-hand information, Prabhupada speaking, you know, Prabhupada books, biographies of Prabhupada by first-hand disciples who lived with him and knew him, that, you know, it's just a matter of time before the whole world would get caught up in the process of bhakti. And we can just help. We can do our part just by hearing, you know, chanting. Because when we chant, that sound vibration goes around the world, you know, so many times. purifying everything in his path. There's somewhere in CC where he even talks about the non-moving, that the echo is the sound of the non-moving living entities having kirtan chanting, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just pretty, it's pretty incredible. And when once you start this process, you have that good fortune, you know, then we just try to make the most of it. So if anybody else has anything they'd like to say, question, comment.
Thank you for a very entertaining and inspiring class. What do you say to parents who don't like to read the pastimes of Krishna killing the demons to their kids?
Oh, because of violence? Is that why?
Yes.
Good luck in this world, because I mean, you know, look at the news, which you can only shelter the kids for so long. And Krishna's like, everything comes from Krishna, right? Everything, love. Like, I remember one line in a song, well, it's actually a poem by Jamadagni, where he says, "And love exists because you are so kind," you know, about Krishna. So also, fighting exists because it goes on, you know. Of course, when Krishna fights, everyone's benefited. So I think I would remind them of that. Does that make sense, Radhika? Yeah, just remind them of that, and that they're going to see, you know, violence. I mean, unfortunately, it's all around us, everywhere now. It's really quite disturbing. I find it so disturbing and terrifying even. But just thankful that, you know, we have this kind of shelter, very real shelter of the holy name and devotional service and association devotees, because the world's really gone mad, you know, in so many ways. And now we try to protect our children as much as we can, but they are going to learn about it. And if they can learn about the real reason for violence, you know, the real purpose of it, because when someone's killed by Krishna, they're liberated. Not like when someone's, you know, bombed here and, you know, destination unknown. It's nothing auspicious about it. There's one more story, if you don't mind, that I tell. I'll tell it really quickly, but I just read this yesterday, and it was about a 17-year-old boy and his two parents, and they had a dog. So the story went that it was a Friday night, and early in the morning, the dog came, like 5 o'clock in the morning, and tried to wake up the mother and father. And they didn't want to get up. And it was Saturday, so they're like, go away, wait. But he wouldn't stop. He kept on, you know, trying to wake them up. So they thought, okay, he probably has to go to the bathroom. So he went downstairs, opened the door, but the dog didn't want to go out. The dog went back up the stairs, and they were like, what's he doing? So they followed him, and he sat right outside the boy's door, the 17-year-old boy's door. So the door wasn't even open. So they went. They opened the door, went in, and this boy, this young man, had a stroke, and it said that he already couldn't talk. He was slurring his words, that he couldn't lift his right arm. So they called the ambulance right away, and they came, and they said, like, generally the parents said, because it was Saturday, they would have let him sleep until noon if it wasn't for that dog. And how did that dog know? You know, how did he sense that there was something wrong with his friend? So the loyalty and the sensitivity is pretty overwhelming. Even there's a story about Lord Chaitanya when he was little, and he found a puppy, and he brought the puppy home. There was a bunch of puppies, and somewhere or other, this one was left behind, so he brought it home. And Mother Sachi wasn't so happy about it. So when he went off to play, Nimai, the mother dog came home and took the little puppy. But, you know, Lord Chaitanya was a little upset. But what happened is this puppy, he said he started to chant in his own way, you know, and people were all around listening to him. Because Lord Chaitanya hugged the puppy became completely purified, and the puppy went home, back to Godhead. But it's just interesting. I thought it would be interesting that you know, that these animals have so much, you know, in touch with Paramatma, like the karmis, they want to call it instinct, but Prabhupada said, no, it's super soul, you know, giving the, like there was a story about a man in the ocean. He was on the big island, right on the ocean, right off the big island, and a riptide got him. And of course, riptides can take you far out into the ocean. So he found himself out in the ocean somewhere. He didn't know where. He didn't even know which way to go. But he decided he was just going to meditate. So he meditated on love, on love of God. And when he opened his eyes, he was surrounded by sea turtles. And one of the big sea turtles came right underneath him. He grabbed onto the shell, and it brought him to shore. It took a while, but it brought him to shore. So anyway, all glories to Sri Krishna, all glories to Lord Chaitanya, all glories to Super Soul. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And yeah.
Thank you so much.